Turning the recorder on now. You know, as I think most of the people around this table would appreciate, business tends to go into sort of the cliches of the month. And this year's cliche seems to be innovation. I have yet to read an annual report where the CEO doesn't tout how innovative the company is. I've yet to meet a CEO who prides himself on the non-innovation of the company. So the innovation seems to be on the end. Usually what we do in the seat at the table is we'll present a case and talk about the case and use that as a jumping board. But we really don't need to do it. We can present this very common vignette, which is the CEO says to the board, we're a very innovative company. And some crank on the board says, oh yeah? How do you measure that? And that's the topic for this evening. How do you measure innovation from a board perspective? Because you're supposed to be hiring and firing the CEO and compensating the CEO. So how do you measure innovation? To help moderate this discussion, Jill has agreed to help us out. Jill Wattels has been the chairman of the board of eMagine Corporation since August of 2001. They are a very cool company, right?
The 2011.
They do the goggles for, you know, some virtual worlds.
And they do the displays for the goggles.
Yeah, displays for the goggles. And she serves on the board of directors of a number of early stage tech companies. Previous roles include director at Innovative Microtechnology. Jill served on the board of overseers of the United States Department of Energy's Fermi National Accelerator Lab. She's a member of the American Physical Society, as in physics, not Jim, and a member of the American Astronomical Society. She began her industry career as a systems engineer. She served as a congressional fellow for the American Physical Society, a research associate for the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and a visiting scientist at the National Academy of Sciences. She received her Bachelor of Science degree in physics from MIT and a PhD in physics from MIT. Jill's business career includes Vice President of Business Development at L3 Communications. She served as Vice President of Business Development and Chief Technologist for L3 Communications Corporation. From 1997 to 2000, Jill served as Vice President and General Manager of the Infrared Imaging Systems, a division of BAE Systems, known to us as Lockheed Martin. From July 1998 to 2001, she served as President and General Manager of BAE Systems Information and Electronic Warfare Systems, Infrared and Imaging Systems, and its predecessor companies. So thank you very much, Jill. Floor is yours.
Okay, so I'm really here to facilitate this conversation. It's very timely for me because I am just getting on an advisory board for a large international mining company that is public and has a public fiduciary board, but they have decided that they are not innovative in the mining industry and they need to become innovative, and they are planning to set up an independent operating unit to work on specific innovative projects and give it its own governance and advisory board, which I am joining. So this is a very timely topic for me. I've been talking to them a bunch on the phone. And as they're formulating this, it's supposed to kick off officially on the 1st of July. It's also an interesting topic because of what I have done in my career, and interesting what you say about nobody says they're not innovative, but I can remember when I first was president of a division and we were taking a brand new technology and creating a product line out of it, working very hard to explain to the people who were working in our old core product lines how important they were to the business, even though they weren't doing a lot of innovation, because that's where all the revenue came from. And you needed to have all that revenue if you were going to actually stick your neck out and do something completely new. So it's not bad to be not innovative in the right circumstances. I think that one of the key questions for looking at a CEO and saying prove it is, how do you know innovation when you see it? I mean, does it have to be Clay Christensen totally disruptive? Does it have to be revolutionary? Can it be incremental? If you take something you've been working on for 10 years and turn it into a new product line, is that being innovative or not? I mean, what? How do you know innovation when you see it in order to even answer that question about how do you measure it? So that, I think, is a good way to start off the conversation. And coupled in with that, you know, I'm a tech geeky kind of person. So to me, usually the first thing I think of with innovation is new products, new technology, new IP, and whatever. But do you have to be tech to be innovative? I think probably you'd say no, but I think we have to discuss that a little bit as well to say what is being innovative. So let's just kind of throw that out to begin with. How are you going to know innovation when you see it? How would you define it? At least say, well, this is not. That helps. But I think we should discuss that to start.
Has anyone had the experience of being on the board and the CEO says we're an innovative company and you're saying to yourself, yeah, sure.
So just somebody, give me an example of something that one of your companies that you've either worked for or are on the board of did that you thought was really innovative. Let's just start with that. What's an example?
Well, Jill, I have a different answer to your question, but Larry's first remark about how do you measure it reminded me of many years ago, 3M had as a corporate goal. I forget the precise parameters, but they would include in their annual report the percent of revenues that came from products that had been offered not more than 5 years. And I think it was something like the corporate goal was 20% of corporate revenues had to come from products that were no more than 5 years old.
But is every new product innovative or is it just a new iteration?
Well, I guess I was thinking about that question too, since you mentioned that a couple of times. You know, the old saying about beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Well, in business, it's in the eye of a client. So I would measure a company's innovation. It could be a market innovation, product innovation, many kinds of innovation. You might measure it in terms of your customer base. Maybe you could have an aging study like 3M did of its products to give you a sense of, are you bringing new customers in? Are you bringing them in from new markets or existing markets? So as I say, there are a variety of ways to innovate in a business. People traditionally think of technology, but it can be beyond conventional definitions of technology.
Well, there was actually an example from about 15 years ago with Amazon. If you guys remember, it was all one-click ordering, and they got a patent on it. Is that innovative? Was that innovative?
Well, what do you think?
Well, the patent office thought it was. They granted them a patent, and it was patented for 15 years. Nobody could build a website with one-click ordering without paying a license fee to, or without getting sued by Amazon. So I would say that at that particular point in time, it was. Mm-hmm. It was, to your point, right?
Yep.
You would say it was innovative, even though from a scientific perspective, I would question that, whether it was innovative, but from a market perspective, you would say it was.
So would the answer to that question depend on data that Amazon might collect that would show whether adding one-click ordering had an impact on their orders? I mean, if it had no impact on their orders, was it still innovative? Or did it have to have a dramatic impact on their orders?
What I recall from that time.
I'm just saying, you know, whatever we don't need to know what the answer was. It's really right. Just a perception thing. So if you're on the board
right.
And they say, we're going to implement this one-click ordering and it's going to be really innovative, would you say, well, let's see the results before we agree with that?
Right. And that's typical, I mean, that's usually how, to the question Larry's asking, right? Usually if it translates into...
Well, repeat purchases.
A value to the company, right? Then you say, all right, because you can innovate and the marketplace can completely reject it. And yeah, it would still be innovative, but you know, you were not able to...
Ellen, you've been trying to say
something. So I come back to the initial question you posed, which is what is innovation? And I do agree, sort of in the eyes of the beholder, but it to me, it comes in many different shapes and sizes. And it truly, to me, it's something new, it's something different. It doesn't have to be, you know, a paradigm shift, because that's another, you know, innovation is off of a long spectrum, if you will. There can be small innovations and then major paradigm shifting innovations. But I'll give you an example. Wheel company. Who would ever think of a wheel company being innovative, right? You know, it's about new line industrial product, right? But two examples. One of the things we're doing is creating lighter, stronger wheels so that when you hit the road, it actually uses less fuel mileage and makes a smoother ride. And we're actually using material science in order to create this aluminum alloy that is just like breaking new ground.
Well, okay? In racing cars, it's very important because the wheels are not managed by the suspension system. And so it's a weight that is very detrimental to the control of the car. So by reducing the weight of the wheels, you're making a major innovation.
This is actually for Chrysler and Ford and, I'm not a racer, so I'll pause on that one.
No,
but
the
second example would be the design of it. Again, because of the design, most people here think of it as rims. Because of the way the air hits when a wheel moves, you're looking for new and different designs that are both pretty and different and whatever, but also innovatively cause there to be less friction.
More aerodynamic is
there
the technical term.
At least I understand from a non-technical standpoint what's going on. But those are two examples of a non-technology company where innovation is critical.
But they're both technology innovations, interestingly enough.
Go from a different angle. I mean, I can obviously see product innovation. But I'm more of, since I'm operational, is business model innovation.
Yeah.
So I'll give you two examples of a company in North Carolina that came in and helped switch from, we had a data center and we're doing it ourselves and we were supplying internet back office service to the rural telecom market. Amazing market because it's so out in the middle of nowhere, but that's what we supplied. And we changed it to cloud and we got rid of our data center, and that was like, you know, everybody loved to look at the servers for all these companies sitting in a room, and then, you know, we moved it out and we had to explain it to everybody in the rural market that this is what we're doing, and you know, everybody accepted it. So it was a new business model, cloud services, and you know, a lot of companies have done that, but it was a lot cheaper. And then the other one was in California, company Tesserae, for a $2 billion company. I helped turn that around, and we really had no business model. We switched it to IP licensing, and it's the company is equivalent of a Qualcomm or an Arm's holding. And so it was pure licensing model. It was a tough switch because you're not generating revenue. You have to wait for the toll gate to fill up when you license, and then you have to get them to take the license. So there was litigation, and it was a real challenge, and we had to raise money in that environment, and then we switched. But once you generated, it was pure, you know, 80% margin, 90% margin. It's a very profitable, tough thing to switch to, and very difficult. So switching the business model is highly innovative. It's tough to do, very tough to do.
Yeah, so we've talked about product, we've talked about business model. Go ahead.
So I have a very different kind of example. When I think about innovation, I would describe it as a new approach to an old problem that gets a better result. Mm-hmm. And so in healthcare, most of the innovation that's happening, and there's a tremendous amount, is not around technology, although that's what everybody focuses on. It's on redesigning the care management process, because it's a very labor-intensive industry, and hospitals, for example, 70% of their costs are labor-related. So one example, this is not a new one, but physicians are very burned out. They're on this treadmill. They're supposed to see patients, you know, every 15 minutes or so. That's the usual billing cycle. They don't get enough quality time with the patient. The patient is dissatisfied. They can't really do a good job of, you know, managing the care. And so some innovative physicians came up with the idea of a group visit whereby they wouldn't see one patient at a time for 15 minutes, but they would have, say, 10 people with diabetes and chronic disease all together in one group visit. And the benefit of that was that there was peer counseling and peer learning and support, as well as you tell a diabetic one time, a person with diabetes, excuse me, that's slang, we're not supposed to say it that way. You tell somebody some advice, it's the same advice you're pretty much giving everybody else anyway. And so the measure of that innovation was that there was higher patient satisfaction, higher patient compliance to the care regimens. The caregivers felt better, like they weren't as burned out. The problem with that innovation was, until only recently, the payment model didn't match it. And so you could do it, and it was a great idea and everybody loved it, but the payment system didn't match it.
Couldn't bill it properly.
But that's the stuff I've been working on now for years, and now the payment system is beginning to match it and do alternative payment, and these kinds of innovations are becoming very much more common and making a huge difference. So it's a very different kind of example.
It's an interesting example because so many people think about innovations in medicine as being new drugs, new medical devices, new treatment methodologies like immunotherapy, but in fact, every time I interact with the medical establishment, the focus is on patient compliance, patient compliant, patient compliant. How can you come up with something that will help me with patient compliance? Because the treatments that we have, if the patients don't follow them, aren't going to be effective. So that's a really good example of bringing a process change in, which is another area in which innovation can be very powerful.
To build on your thought, you know, my knowledge in healthcare has changed over the years in terms of what used to be important. Before, if you build it, they would come. And it didn't matter what it was. In today's environment, it's all about improving outcomes, improving patient care, while at the same time reducing costs. So if they've got a clinical standard of practice, if you're not introducing something that is actually improving that patient's outcome, improving that patient's care, while reducing the cost, don't bother to show up. And so I equate that to screening lenses. So as you try to define what is innovation, for many of the healthcare companies, it's about identifying what are the unmet clinical challenges or the unmet customer needs and those pain points in the continuum of care. One example, I had actually, in the early 2000s, I founded a company called Rubbermaid Healthcare that focused on electronic medication administration records. And in the early years, the goal was to reduce medication errors, which is the dispensing of meds that were the wrong medication, the wrong patient, the wrong dose, that had really bad effects to the point where a patient could die. And we actually partnered with HCA, Healthcare Corporation of America, to shadow their workforce and really understand how they were caring for their patients. And the things we saw were appalling. Things such as nurses that were treating anywhere from 8 to 12 patients, going to a Cardinal Pyxis system that houses all of the pharmacy medications on the floor, and in the beginning of their shift, putting in their code and literally taking out the medications for all 8 or all 12 patients and stuffing their pockets. And we literally said nothing, we just shadow. And what we come to find, the reason they do that is they're too busy. And they don't want to have to walk back and forth. It was about productivity. So they just wanted to be able to go to one patient, oh, this is Betty, and do her thing, and then go to the next. Well, you can only imagine the type of errors that could occur. So that dawned upon us, because the big problem to HCA and many healthcare institutions were medical errors. And so our gauge of how do you measure innovation, it was how did we positively impact the reduction of medical errors? And therefore, how do you go about doing it? And this was mundane. I mean, all we did was introduce EMR carts. These were medication carts that were ergonomically designed, that were JCO compliant, that enabled the nurse to spend more time with a patient. Because the other problem was they were not spending time with patients. They weren't providing care. They were sitting back behind the desk, typing in the reports and filling out all the paperwork. What this facilitated was two things: the ability to actually care for patients while reducing medication errors. So I bring it back to the screening criteria.
Also process change. So let me just push a little bit on this question of how big does the change have to be not just a change, but an innovation, if you will. So let's talk about cell phones, for example. So you have, you know, the Galaxy 8 coming out and the iPhone 8 coming out. And everybody agrees that when the first iPhone was introduced a mere 10 years ago, they feel like they've been around forever, but they haven't, that was incredibly innovative, or the first iPod or, you know, whatever you want. But version 8, is that innovative, or is that just the next iteration of an existing product? And of course the company has to do change some things and make it better, and but is that innovative or not? If so, you change your product every year and a half.
So the business I just came out of was about $150 million tech services provider. And it was basically a reseller of major infrastructure manufacturers' products, Cisco, Microsoft, those types. Our innovations were all minor in this definition. So, you know, Harvard Business School says you've got major ones, like now there's no smartphone, now you have a smartphone as major versus
which, by the way,
seven,
people
eight,
didn't even
nine.
Know they needed.
Yeah.
Right. This business that I was in, everything was a minor innovation. We would get some new capability that came from a manufacturer. It was really an add-on to what our clients could do. We ourselves weren't developing it, but we were bringing it to our clients, and they were all minor innovations, and that was good for our business because it basically provided streams of revenue, a reason to go back in, help them do something new, and it wasn't earth-shattering, but it actually added value to their business in terms of the outcome they were looking for, and that was the only source of quote-unquote innovation within our business, because I was on a group that led this effort, and the only thing we were going to get was all minor because of the way we were in the supply chain.
See, so, I would argue that until this year, nobody would even call that innovation. You would just call that the natural, proper evolution of products and services where you bolt things on and you add new things, and because everybody knows that if you don't keep doing that, your product dies.
But in our case, we weren't the manufacturer. So I needed new talent, new processes to bring it to clients that involve sales and marketing as well as delivery. So I would argue that with where we were, with the kinds of things we had to do, there were enough changes for us where I couldn't just, I don't have a red cup now, I have a blue cup, and that's innovation. I'm not the cup manufacturer. I'm in midstream, if I'm making sense.
So for us,
we called it innovation. Maybe there was some hyperbole there.
So you're saying it felt like innovation to a company that wasn't doing anything dramatic because it was making some changes.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, look, it gets to be semantic. But the issue, of course, is if you're on a board and you're talking to a company CEO and they're claiming they're innovative, then, you know, when you try and measure it, you might want to start out with a conversation about asking the CEO, what's your definition of innovation? Because until we know that, we don't know what you think you're signing up to do. And most of the time with a board, you want to measure the CEO on what the CEO is signing up to do, not on something different. So maybe the first thing to do is to ask the CEO that question. What is your definition of innovation? What do you believe you're signing up for in innovation? And then you can start to talk about, okay, the things you're doing, you know, are you saying you're going to get 10% more revenue? Are you saying you're going to get 50% more revenue? Are you going to drop your costs by 10%? Are you going to drop your costs by 30%? Are you going to enter, you know, a new market every year for the next 5 years, or one new? You really have to figure out, you have to pick the brains of what the company is committing to.
But isn't the basic question still that innovation means you've done something that's not been done before? The question that follows might be the impact of that, the value created, et cetera, could be other questions that follow.
Yeah, because the answer might be you don't care,
right,
whether it's something. Sometimes something you haven't done before is the wrong choice.
Perhaps.
Right.
But I think in the absolute sense, innovation is all about creating something that hasn't been created before. Whether it is useful, not useful, has impact, no impact, follows. So obviously if it's somebody did something silly and has no usable value, then it's just going to fall by the wayside. But I guess that's my question, isn't it? That's fundamentally the question. I mean, go back to the example of one-click ordering, right? There was nothing special about it, but it had not been done before. And it did have a reasonable impact, I would guess, right? But, you know, they compare that to your question about the iPhone iteration 7, right? But here's what they did. The regular phone didn't change, but they did something with the cameras that is having an impact, right? You got two cameras, and with software, you can now achieve the same depth of field that you need a big, traditional
camera
for, right?
You get stereo, is what you're doing.
So you would say that was pretty innovative.
Well, if I was on a board and some, you know, you have to look at the company's history and does it have a culture of innovation? Because I've done like 6 turnarounds and I've looked at companies and they have so many products going on, so much R&D, nothing's getting done. And I think it'd be an absolute waste. Why do you, you know, somebody come in and say, we're going to do innovation, as Larry says, this year. I'd say, well, when have you done it in the past? How are you going to do it? Who's going to do it? You know, did you bring some new people in who have that culture, that drive? Because it's a whole new thing.
You're a great straight man. Because I wanted to pivot the conversation, having had the first part of that conversation, to a discussion about how do you up the level, whether you've not done innovation before, or you've done some innovation before, but you want to crank it up, how do you crank up the level of innovation in your corporation and actually make that work? You don't just say to people, be more innovative. I think most people would agree that when you want a corporation to be more innovative, you're actually asking people to take more risk because you're asking them to do things that they haven't done before. So one of the major issues becomes, for example, if somebody in your company steps up and takes more risk and it doesn't produce more result, in fact, it could use up resources and therefore damage rather than improve, what happens to that person? And if you shoot them, will anybody else ever step up and try it again? So that question of to crank up innovation, how do you manage that in a way? So I commented about I'm getting on this board and they're creating this whole new division. And so one of the huge questions for industry, and it's gone back and forth, is do you put innovation in a corporate research center? Do you put it in a new division the way this corporation that I'm talking to is going to do it? Do you try to foster it in all of your operating units, maybe some of whom, I mean, this is a mining company. Some of their operations have done nothing but dig stuff out of the ground literally for decades in the same way, and they haven't changed anything, which is one of the reasons why they're so interested in finding better ways to do it. But that question of how do you manage innovation to actually get it to work? I mean, in some sense, it's easier in the tech startup industry because when you're starting a new company, everything is innovative. And we've got that culture in Silicon Valley and in Boston and in North Carolina and a few other places where there are a lot of young people and, you know, everybody can eat innovation for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But if you're talking about existing companies that are 50 years old or 100 years old in some cases, and you're talking about innovation, how do you do that in a way that works? Because even in the last century, in this country, we had major corporations that just, they all shut down their corporate R&D centers because they couldn't transfer anything to their operating units. Almost all of them, a couple still have them, yeah.
I can give another healthcare example that's right under our nose, and this is being done at Partners Healthcare, both Brigham and Women and Mass General and other major academic medical centers across the country. So they actually have set up Centers for Innovation, and they have set aside seed money, and they've got a process by which anybody in the organization, from a housekeeper to the most brilliant scientist and researcher, can put in ideas, and there's a panel that looks at them, and they seed them. And an enormous amount of change and innovation has come out of that. We started I started an award for healthcare among our hospitals in the state called the Accountable Care Awards for people to innovate in different categories of accountable care. And more winners came out of that process and that system than from anything else in the Commonwealth. When somebody really hits on something, and some of these are just basic processes of care that make a big difference and save money, save lives, but some of them have potential for business income and entrepreneurialism, and then they turn that over to another of their subsidiaries that deal specifically with taking products to market and things like that. So it was a very conscious decision. They've been at it about 7 or 8 years. They're leading in a lot of ways. I see absolute results coming out of it in every way, so that's one approach.
Well, and one of the questions really is, do you try to engage everybody in your organization down to the janitors and back up again, or do you try to engage the sort of more elite part of your organization and put them in little skunk works and say, go think up innovative things?
Well, I can tell you, real estate is a lot like mining in that everything's been done kind of the same way for a very, very, very long time. We did not, you know, in my company, we did not separate out a skunk works. We incorporated it in, and I guess my first answer would be it starts at the top. Because if the person at the top isn't committed to let's get suggestions from people on the front line or from anywhere in the organization, and is going to shoot the first person who comes up with an idea that fails, then it is not going to work. So it does need to be celebrated. It needs to be spouse throughout the organization, and I've seen, I think it's Google that gives 20% of their engineers time and says, you know, this is your time, don't spend.
No, that's gone.
It's gone? Well, whatever. Well,
the woman from Goldman Sachs is grinding out the P&L now.
Really?
They're not doing
well, it's what happens when a company that was innovative grows up.
Yeah.
Well, there's a saying, right? Small companies innovate, big companies integrate.
I guess I would question the ability of people who are so far away from the day-to-day, unless they're going to be incorporated in the day-to-day, again, in the mining scenario you're talking about, how they could actually come up with innovation if they aren't of the world that they're trying to innovate in.
Your premise about how does a board measure innovation or, you know, whether they are innovative, I think in large part depends, or at least one factor that needs to be looked at is how big a bet is involved in whatever industry you're in. If you're in a high-tech industry that it's tens of billions of dollars to build new bricks and mortar to make a new technology, that's a much bigger risk to that business than it is the skunk works over at 3M to come up with a different color post-it note. And you can make lots of those bets, but you can't make lots of the huge bets. And so how you manage the bets that you're willing to take in pursuit of innovation depends a lot about what industry you're in and the factor, input factors that it would require. And another comment that I wanted to make would be, you know, there's a huge difference between an innovation and an innovative company. I mean, most companies can look at themselves and find things that have been innovations. Maybe small, maybe large. If they're a consumer products company, you'll tend to look at it in terms of their new products, their factor outputs, 3M, for example. Other companies, they might be looking at factor inputs, you know. We can do sort of the same stuff, but much cheaper. New technology, software, whatever. You get into Walmart, where your services, okay, is their innovation has nothing to do with what you buy at Walmart. It's how you get it there. It's the supply chain management. So services, and you know, but those are all innovations. But to be innovative as a company, i.e., from a board perspective, you know, there's a sustainability aspect to it. And innovation doesn't make you an innovative company. You know, two innovations doesn't make you an innovative company. You know, 3M, 100 years worth of new products coming out all the time that may or may not be exciting, probably, in my mind, make you an innovative company, because you've got 80% of your revenue is coming from things that are no more than 5 years old. Other industries, it would be a different kind of a sustainability measure, but I think you need to have that perspective. You don't want a CEO or a board that just comes in and says, okay, we're going to spend a whole lot of money on a research tank or a new technology. Boom. I mean, that's placing a bet, sure. And it might be a good innovation. Might work great. But I'm not sure that that gives you a firm basis as a board for measuring, developing metrics, or nurturing sustainable innovation flow, which makes you innovative.
So, to some degree, I think the question relies on what is it the corporation is trying to do. So if you're a 3M and you have a continual flow of new products, none of which may be earth-shaking, but each of which creates a new revenue stream, because maybe you know that any of the life of your average life of your products is a certain length of time. You know, they go up and then they go down, and then the next one goes up and the next one goes down, and so you know the rate at which you have to introduce new products in order to either sustain your revenue or grow your revenue at some growth rate that keeps the stock market happy or keeps somebody happy. But, you know, then there are other companies that have either plateaued or their markets are starting to shrink. I mean, one of the things that made the oil companies into energy companies was drilling for oil wasn't going to keep them going forever anymore. They'd been drilling for oil for maybe 100 years, but they weren't going to look at the next 100 years of drilling for oil. So they've converted themselves into energy companies because the demand for energy keeps going up, but the demand for oil doesn't keep going up. So it could be a market thing that's driving you to have to do something different, or your business is not sustainable, or your business isn't going to grow, which most people would say is the equivalent of your business is going to start dying. And so some of it is a question of why are you trying to be innovative, and what is it that your business needs, and if it needs something more than what you've been doing, what are you going to do that's different? Do you need to cut your costs? Do you need a new product line? Do you need an entirely new way business model? We need to change from selling hardware to leasing hardware and selling services. I mean, it's a question of what's driving what you have to do for your business. So, question, I mean, wouldn't you as a board be thinking about where is this business going, and what do we have to do to get there, and do we have to do innovation to get there, wherever there happens to be? Old comment, if you don't know where you're going, any path will get you there.
I think here, I mean, your points, they're all valid points, and what you were saying was right on. You know, for the business I just started, I mean, I spent 6 months researching in the software space, right? And I had an idea for a product that I thought was innovative, and then, you know, digging around, I mean, I went through I don't know how many different ideas, and it wasn't that some of the things I had was not innovative. It was just that there was so much of stuff out there in the marketplace that the differentiation wasn't there. So yeah, you know, I could probably come up with something, but it wouldn't move the needle. So I think your point about, you know, you could go off and look at something that might be innovative, but it might not move the needle. Most of the things that are useful have been invented, and therefore the bar is very, very high now. And I think at least in the software space, it is very high. I can't comment on other industries, but I suspect that some of that is true in other industries too.
But you know, and I think you raised the point before about customer validation, and I always worry when we have a company that comes to us that's in the process of filing either a patent or another patent on a product that they have no idea whether there's a market for that particular product. We have a company that was just acquired by L3 that manufactures underwater autonomous vehicles, the old school, you know, sort of the torpedo looking. It's a workhorse, side-scanning sonar, and so on. And we have another company, so they built their company, they got acquired, a successful exit. We have another company in the building that built a underwater autonomous vehicle that looks like a tuna fish, swims like a tuna fish, it articulates like a tuna fish.
Yep, I know that one.
They have no market for it. It's a, you know, so they built it without, and it really only has one application, but they didn't really, they built it because they could, they didn't really understand what the market looked like before, and now they're growing through SBIR and some other grant funding sources.
That's called the dilemma of the engineer, creating solutions in search of a problem.
That is true, but I will say in defense of companies like that, sometimes it takes the entrenched larger corporations a while to figure out that there are things they can do with a new technology that they never thought about because they didn't know any way to do them. Same is true in the UAV market. There are companies working on how to, while airborne, morph the shape of wings the way birds do, for example. And you look at that initially and go, well, that's kind of a nice toy. I mean, we can study all of that, but what do you need it for? But if you think about it long enough, you could probably get far more energy efficient flight. After all, birds have incredibly energy efficient flight. So if they can actually get this stuff to work, the difference is time frame. Your company that, you know, built the sort of standard underwater autonomous vehicle, there's already a market in the time frame to sell out and get acquired and have an equity event, a liquidity event, and get everybody money. When that's going to be. Whereas
that was 10 years, by the way. I didn't want to make it sound like
it's not fast. But one of the rules of thumb in technology is from the time somebody has a really interesting idea, like, say, the how to morph airplane wings in the air real time, until it turns into a really revenue-producing proposition, that rule of thumb is 20 years. So you don't want a world where nobody's doing that stuff, that early stuff. That's what DARPA was created for, really, is the DARPA hard early stuff. But on the other hand, if you're running an investment fund with a 7-year lifetime, those are probably not the companies you want to be investing in, even though those might be the most innovative companies on the planet.
Now, for me, I think the most critical thing as a board member is for the board to be clear who our investors are and who we're playing to. So a company that I very much admire is McDonald's. And they have been very clear in their 10-Ks and in their annual reports, we are here for the benefit of long-term investors. If you're a speculator, if you're a trader, don't invest in McDonald's. We're not governing this for you. We're governing it for long-term investors. Now, if you look at McDonald's, they've made a lot of mistakes. On the other hand, because they're so clear that they are there for the long-term investors, it's given them permission to try things. Some of them have worked, some of them have not worked, but they'll get it eventually. But the reason they're gonna get it eventually is that they know who their investor is, and they're very public about who that investor should be. Conversely, the other side of that would be the private equity dominated portfolio company that wants to have a cash out in 3 years, or they want to do an IPO in 3 years. At least they're very clear. And because they're so clear, you know, if you've got some innovative project, it's going to take you 10 years before you're going to make any money, you know that's not the way to go, because the board is focusing on a cash out in 3 years. So fine, you're not going to be an innovative company. You're going to focus on top line growth. It's all clear, it's all explicit. But to me, the key issue for me is, as a board member, is who's our investor?
Well, it's sort of back to reinforcement of what I was just saying. The first thing you have to know as a board is, what's the strategy for this business? What does this business have to get done over what period of time? And is investing in really innovative things, I mean, if you have to be really innovative to save the business from going into a pit, then you're gonna do it. because that the only other choice is not good. But in fact, if the business is growing properly and it's very predictable and your investors are happy and things are solid, that might not be the moment in time to take a bunch of money and do something that sort of disrupts the apple cart. Or, by the way, in a few instances, it might be exactly the right time if everybody agrees that if we start something now, we'll have a really big new business in 5 years that nobody expected us ever to have. You have to know what the strategy is.
So I want to go back to the central question, right? What is it? How do you know that innovation happened? What would be the definition? What would be the criteria?
I think it depends on the... Depends. I think it's not one thing.
I don't know. Let me propose something.
Let's have a few new people speak. Go ahead.
I think it may be, in some ways, retroactive, meaning that you have something that is considered innovation, but it's only time that tells that it is. So if you look at the iPhone, it survived. It hasn't really been replaced. I mean, yes, there's Android, but it hasn't been replaced in its inception from now until version 8. I mean, there may be incremental changes, but fundamentally, over time, it has survived its innovation. And there are other things, of course, I can't think of one, that you look at that you think are innovative and don't survive. And so, therefore, turn out to be not at all innovative to anybody. So I think there may be a time factor in here that doesn't allow you to always be able to predict. Are we innovative? Do we have an innovation? And will it be successful?
Well, one that didn't survive was Betamax, a superior technology.
But the question is that an innovation or not? Just because it failed.
It failed because of its marketing strategy.
Right, but is it still innovative?
With an inferior product.
But is it still innovative?
But would you say it's technically innovative, but not commercially?
No, you'd say it was technically innovative and it was mishandled.
Successful.
Right.
Which means that innovative things can be mismanaged.
I'm going to exercise my role as a timekeeper. We've got about 10 minutes left.
I just want to say something about, you know, at a board level, since that's the question, rather than, you know, innovation, not innovation. If I was on a board, I'd say, who's going to implement it? Okay, and where I've been in companies, you know, the same old crowd is doing it, and I do appreciate going in. I've done tons of process improvement and asking people internally, but they're all into the same way of operating. I would say if you're really going to get something, bring some people in from some different vertical markets that you're selling into. Bring some other ideas in. Maybe bring two new board members in who've done something different and similar. I think so many companies... semiconductor companies think this way, but they're selling to all kinds of other companies. So I propose who's implementing is the key issue.
You keep touching on a couple of issues related to a topic, Joe, you haven't brought up, which I would describe as the politics of innovation. Your remark earlier about culture and the receptivity of the people in the firm or the institution, this notion of who will do the innovation, you have very often underlying the innovation a tension between winners and losers. Very often in product companies, you talked earlier about the traditional products are the ones that generate all the revenue. Those are also the products that get attacked, the innovative solution, and sometimes that's why those research groups that you talked about disappearing years ago went away. Because the politics in the organization overcame the impulse to improve through change. So the issue is identifying the winners and losers, potentially, when you're thinking about the whole problem, as well as these other dimensions that I would also describe as part of the politics of innovation. It comes down to, you know, a people process. Innovation is done by the people who are going to be facing customers, facing the line workers, and often big changes, expensive changes involved.
Yeah, go ahead.
I keep thinking about innovation that affects the bottom line in other ways, not product oriented, but the culture of the organization. And, you know, part of the goal is to make money by cutting expenses as well as having new lines of revenue. So I'm intrigued by companies that do things like throw out the idea of requesting and having a fixed amount of vacation. You take what you want, when you want, whatever, and measuring, you know, the impact of that. Do they have better retention? Do they attract millennials and other people to work for them that other companies can't? Or companies that have scrapped performance reviews altogether, that hideous process that we all have to go through all the time and we really hate and question the value of. I didn't think of this as innovation, but I became the first employer in Massachusetts not to hire tobacco users 5 years ago. You use tobacco in any way, in any form, you can't work for me. It was legal, and I was waiting to get a legal challenge, but it not only did it work, not only do we no longer have any tobacco users that work with us and are a healthy small employer, but our costs went down, our resentment about people who were taking breaks went down. And, you know, by proving you could do that in my little company, six hospitals now don't hire tobacco users, universities don't, companies are beginning not to. So sometimes innovation, I think, sets a tone about your culture and what you're all about, what you stand for, that has other benefits other than overt product.
Did you fire people that started to smoke?
So what I did is I grandfathered the ones that did and gave them a lot of assistance to quit. I put a lot of performance pressure on the ones that continued to smoke, and as they retired and left, we basically didn't hire people in. So now we're tobacco free, and the whole culture of my organization is entirely different.
Lynn, help me here. I'm a job candidate. You're interviewing me for a job at MHA.
Right.
How are you going to tell if I smoke?
Well, first of all, it's a partly honor system because it's on the application up front. We ask the question. You know, most smokers don't think that people can't tell they're not smokers, but it's really pretty obvious who smokes and who doesn't, so the smell test is pretty good. But even someone, we had a candidate who said, you know, I just with my boyfriend, just like on Saturday night at the bar only. No, you cannot work for us. And so we also can test. We can test, we decided that we could do urine tests, not serum. We haven't had to, because the honor system and
Well, culture is a big piece of innovation. It's absolutely true. And, you know, Mike, I did bring up earlier one of the big issues with, if you centralize it, how do you get it out to your operating divisions? If you do it out in your operating divisions, do you have a way to take things that really work well and spread them through the rest of your company? If you take something and somebody decides to try it and it doesn't work and it causes their short-term revenue to be affected, what happens to that person who took the risk and tried it? I mean, all of that is, those are management issues that are really, really important part of the innovative process. But going back just briefly to the board, I think you got to think about, I mean, the board doesn't run the company, the executives run the company, so what do you want to hear from the executives? And I would maintain, in a devil's advocate mode, I want to know where they want to take the company, and if they're calling themselves innovative, what innovations do they need, or what innovative culture do they think they need to get to the strategic goal that they're putting in front of the board as where they want to take the company? And to me, that would be the most interesting part. But anybody have some last comments about what to them would be the most interesting part?
Any comments?
Go
ahead.
But I'm still sort of going back to the central question that for a board, you've got to have some objective way to say this is an innovation and this is not. Everything else that was stated was accurate. There's no, I have got no issue with that, but you've got to have some way of saying, oh, I've got to, this is what meets the criteria of an innovation, and this does not.
Why?
If you can't have that.
Why?
Why?
Who cares if the company gets where it needs to go, whether you semantically label it as an innovation or not?
Because isn't that the central question? You're saying, I want to be innovative, I'm trying to use innovation as a way to get there. If you just simply say, I'm just looking for ways to achieve my business goals, that's okay. But if you say that the objective to achieve your goals is through innovation, then at a minimum you should be able to say, okay, how do I know an innovation when I see it? So, you know, you gave the example, and I would accept that that's innovative, because I would look at it and say, hey, if it's a problem that's never been solved before, then it's innovative. If it's a problem that's already been solved by somebody, then implicitly you're leveraging off somebody else's
so
innovation.
So if she's adopting something else that she's heard about that's being done in Minnesota, she's not innovative?
If the problem's been solved, then it's been solved. Innovation is all about solving problems that haven't been solved.
Yeah, I think
so
that's your
back to, I would maintain that from the board perspective,
right.
What the board's job is for the company to have a risk-managed strategic plan to take the business somewhere that we all agree is in the best interest of the investors. And if the executives put together a plan that will get it there, and that plan might include very innovative things, and one might argue whether they're innovative or not, I would maintain, I don't care. I'm the one who started out, by the way, saying let's define innovation. I actually don't care whether it's called innovation or not. What I care about is, in fact, is this the best way to get to the business to it, get the business to its strategic goals? So we started with definitions. Me personally, I don't know that I care about the definitions. I care about, as a board member, about the strategic trajectory of the company.
This is a good place to end. Thank you very much, Jill. You're welcome to continue to stay and schmooze and talk about this. Next month, we will have a conversation about succession planning in family-dominated businesses.
Ooh, that's a session. Yeah. What day is that one?